All right, dear listeners, it is the return. I don't want to play this up too much. I don't want to get too dramatic about it, but I'm super excited. I'm staring through the wonders of the internet at the beautiful face of Pete LaCleed on the other line with me. Pete, how are you doing?
Don't call it a comeback.
Don't call it a comeback, man. But it is. That's exactly what it is. It's a comeback.
It's good to see you. You know, when I saw you in October, we talked in person, and we've been waiting to bring this back for a while. So it's good to be back, my friend. It's good to see you on the other side.
I'm super excited about this. For our listeners, Pete and I talked about a week and a half ago, Pete, and we were like, we really miss just hanging out with each other and talking about sports. And we think we need to get back to doing this regularly. So we're going to try to do it weekly or as close to weekly as we can. We also decided that we're going to focus this time on baseball and football, mostly MLB, NFL, but a little bit of NCAA sprinkled in there because you really kind of need one to talk about the other as we evaluate prospects and just talk about the future of professional programs. So we're really excited to be back. Part of the return is we're actually going back to Third String. We just thought it'd be good to get back to our roots a little bit and go back to the original name. So we're rebranding. We were once Third String and then the lineup, but now we're Third String again. So we're back and ready to go at it with all of the Third String analysis at best that you have missed. And part of that is going to be kind of a change to the structure, and we're open to feedback as well. So if you're listening to this and you think that an additional segment or a different segment would be good, then definitely let us know. But what we're thinking now is that we'll start off with what we'll call small ball, and that'll be just like little things we need to get off our chest, things that we need to talk about in the world of sports. And then we'll transition to segment two, which is going to be Take Shop, and that is where one or both of us will espouse what is likely to be a controversial hot take, and we'll defend that and then hash it out and talk about it. And then the final segment will be Pick'em, where we will look at some of the key matchups coming up in the week ahead and make our picks for that. So without further ado, let's start off with some small ball, Pete. I want to start off this with telling you that I saw a headline today that Ron Rivera is the primary candidate in the Washington Redskins search for a new coach. I also saw a headline that Bruce Allen will no longer be running football operations for the Washington Redskins. As a lifelong Redskins fan, are those two news items enough to convince you that you need to stick it out with the Redskins and not become a Las Vegas Raiders fan next fall?
Yes, though the two aren't mutually exclusive. So for any of our longtime listeners, it wouldn't be a Third String podcast without taking some shots at the old Deadskins. So
that is true.
It's good to be back to our roots already. I saw the news today. To be honest, I was a little surprised when he was fired out of Carolina. Ironically, it was a loss to the Redskins that got him fired out of Carolina. But a series you and I have talked about a lot on Amazon Prime was the All or Nothing series. This past season, they actually followed the Carolina Panthers. So a lot of time spent with Cam Newton, a lot of time spent with Ron Rivera. I really like Ron Rivera as a dude. My fear with Ron Rivera is that it is not an incredibly high ceiling. I think he's a playoff caliber coach year in, year out. So already that's better than they've been except for all but 2 years of the last decade. So that's a great step in the right direction. I like his defensive mindedness. I just think he's a good guy to bring in. But the Redskins have brought in a lot of good guys to be coaches, and it hasn't worked out. So I'm really, really interested and really apprehensive about this Bruce Allen news. If it is true that he's no longer the president of football operations, I am back on board. What worries me is the reports are that he is not out of the organization. He is out of being president of football operations.
Exactly, yeah.
So I don't know how you keep this guy in the building and try to get rid of all this supposed toxic culture, toxic relationships he had with guys like Trent Williams and RG3 and the Shanahan family and the Gruden family and all these big names who they've run out of town years and years, to the point that it is just well known throughout football that it is a very toxic organization right now. And I'm glad that Dan Snyder is finally going to turn on one of his supposed lifelong friends, because it hasn't worked out over 10 years. The Redskins aren't even close to 500 since he took over in 2009. They have played in two playoff games and won neither of them.
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure.
Just for so long.
I'm not sure if there's a GM or a GM equivalent across any sport that has the record that Bruce Allen does. Just in terms of chronic mismanagement, lighting relationships with players on fire, metaphorically speaking. And on top of that, I mean, it's just got to be, I do feel for you as a Redskins fan. I mean, on one hand, as an Eagles guy, I don't feel for the Redskins fan base, but as a fan of the sport in general, I feel for any fan base that has to deal with a horrible owner like Dan Snyder, who rivals James Dolan of the Knicks for worst owner in professional sports, and has a GM like Bruce Allen, who probably is the worst GM in all of professional sports. So it's a tough 1-2 punch. And I love Ron Rivera as well. I think he's really good. I mean, I think, like, I get why David Tepper wants him out of Carolina. David Tepper's a very, I mean, he's a hedge fund guy, right? Like, he's very kind of forward-leaning, forward-thinking, wants to embrace analytics. Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron, kind of an old-school guy, right? And Tepper was basically like, you know, no hard feelings, love Ron. He's not the guy that I want leading the organization forward. So I get it. I mean, I think Ron Rivera is a great candidate, will be a great candidate wherever he ends up. But I have to think the Redskins have to really be selling him on this. And he's probably coming to the table thinking, like, I need to make it clear that the way they've done personnel management and acquisition and selection to date is not going to work for me, because he's just setting himself up for failure, right? And, like, right now he's an attractive candidate, but if he goes to the Redskins for 3 years, and because of what's going on in the front office there, he pieces together three seasons of 4 to 6 wins apiece, that's not going to cut it. And then he's not going to be very hireable anywhere else.
And then he's going to be a defensive coordinator for the rest of his life at best, right? Probably like a linebackers coach even at best. So where this gets interesting is obviously what's the future of Bruce Allen. I've heard some rumors that he's going to stick around to help the Redskins build a new stadium. I don't really know why you need Bruce Allen to help you do that. I think Dan Snyder can probably figure that out. He is a smart businessman. He's a terrible football guy, but he's a smart businessman, as referenced by paying $40 for parking and $12 for a beer. But that is another discussion for another time. But if they can bring Ron Rivera in, that sends a good signal to me that they're giving him some control over the organization, and draft picks especially have to be the first thing they're going to talk about, because the Redskins finally won something. And, well, they won something, but they still couldn't be number one, have a number two overall pick as of today. And what they're going to do with that pick, I think, is very, very interesting. A lot of people want Chase Young out of Ohio State, who we saw play very well last night in the college football playoff. But there's also a lot of people who I tend to side with here who think that they should probably sell a lot of those, or sell that draft pick and try to get a lot of second and third rounders and some potential future first rounders, maybe even for that second overall pick coming up here in April, to try to build something, because getting these flash in the pans at number 14 year in and year out isn't working out. We got to start building an organization again. So
yeah,
if they can talk Ron into it.
I completely agree with you. And you know, we have lots of time to talk about draft stuff as we get closer to that, but you know, I'm a huge fan of selling high draft capital. Especially if you're in a rebuilding position. I mean, if you happen to be a team that had a down year and it was because of injuries or whatever, and that's kind of an anomaly, and you know which guy you're going after, or if you're a team who really needs a quarterback, like the Bengals right now, then it makes sense to hold onto your high pick and use that high pick on the guy that you need. But, like, you're not going to, I mean, the Browns learned this with Myles Garrett, right? Myles Garrett's an incredible player when he's not suspended indefinitely for swinging a helmet at someone on the field. But he's a really good player. But when the Browns took him off the board at number one, like, he's not the cornerstone of their team, because you need more than a defensive end to build a team. So I think that any team like the Redskins that really needs to rebuild is better served by taking their number two pick and turning it into, you know, I haven't looked at the Jimmy Johnson value chart related to the number two pick, but turned it into like a number 24 and a number 30 and 2 second rounders, you know? Just as an example. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is, did you watch the Eagles game today?
I caught bits and pieces of third and fourth quarter, really when they started pulling ahead. So you're welcome. It happened when I tuned in.
But thank you very much. I did need your good vibes there, because it was not looking good when I had tuned in. I was sweating out there for a little bit when it was tied up 17-17 after the Saquon Barkley run. Not a great football game really all around, but I think the Eagles defense played serviceably well. But it drove home to me just what a dumpster fire the NFC East is. And and it was an all NFC East day, because the Eagles were facing the Giants and your Skins were facing the Cowboys. The Cowboys just destroyed the Skins, and that's just a team I don't understand at all. But we are about to see Jason Garrett be fired in Dallas. I've been checking the news today. I haven't seen it announced yet, but probably tomorrow morning. And obviously, Washington does not have a coach right now. So It'll probably be Rivera. It'll probably be someone pretty high profile. Lincoln Riley's name has been thrown around for the Dallas vacancy, or what will be the Dallas vacancy. And then maybe Pat Shurmur stays, maybe he doesn't. Doug Peterson, obviously, his job is safe in Philadelphia. He's done a good job with just a roster that's been destroyed by injuries this year. But I think the NFC East is really bad right now, but I'm excited to see what happens to it. Just as an NFC East fan, like, no, I don't want to see Lincoln Riley go to Dallas. No, I don't really want to see Rivera go to Washington. I think, be okay with Pat Shurmur staying in New York, and hopefully he does for me as an Eagles fan. But I'm excited to see this division just get better, because it's been a little bit embarrassing as an NFC East fan just watching this division be terrible and have a champion at 9-7 hosting the Seahawks, who are, what, 12-4, right, I think? So hosting them at home, because the Eagles are a division leader and the Seahawks are a wild card. So anyway, I'm excited to see all of that. But the thing I wanted to ask you about the Eagles game, did you see Boston Scott's ridiculous, completely unnecessary spin move?
I did.
Pretty great.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
So it's obviously been gifted all over Twitter already. And I saw that he recently tweeted about this and said, "Sorry about the spin move. Madden glitched on me."
I appreciate it, because in week 17, we never really have much to talk about in terms of on-field performance, talent levels. Most starters are sitting. You're playing for seeding a lot, unless you're the terrible NFC East this year and playing for your way into the playoffs. I appreciate having something to enjoy watching.
Oh, totally. Week 17. Yeah, completely agree. So that was fun. I also wanted to talk to you, Pete, about fantasy football.
Fantasy football, my hot button topic.
I know it is. And I thought you'd be a good person to talk to about this, because at the beginning of this football season, I reached out to you and I was like, "Pete, I'm making a fantasy football team. I want you in it." And you were like, "If you really need somebody, because you got an odd number, I will do it. However, I swore it off last year, so I prefer not to." And I was like, "Oh my goodness, this
100% accurate."
I was like, "This sounds serious." And we never talked after that about fantasy football. I ended up having an even number of people in my league, so I didn't need you. I still wanted you to be in the league, but I respected your wishes. I would love to just real quick get the backstory on your hatred of fantasy football now. And then I've got my own story to share that has a kind of a surprising conclusion to it. So I'll let you talk for now about why you swore off fantasy football.
So my hatred of this goes many, many years, and it's one of those bad relationships I continue to find myself relapsing into. That I'll take a year or two off, I'll come back, I'll watch a lot of preseason, I'll watch the draft, I'll be feeling good, I'll be in it for the first 2 or 3 weeks. We have an exciting kickoff to the season, and all of a sudden by week 5 or 6, I find myself watching individuals over teams, not really caring about any like dynamic other than individual performances. And I find myself watching any NFL game just because I have a player in it, which is exactly what the NFL wants me to do. But at the same time, I am watching these games through my phone, just looking to see the updates. About a year and a half ago at this point, so right before the 2018 season kicked off, we had a guy who auto-drafted half of his team. The first overall pick, he took Nick Foles, when Nick Foles was not a starter anywhere on a team. And just based on attrition and based on the fact that he was making random moves for fun. If you've ever seen the show The League on FX, truly was Taco, where he didn't even know who was playing. He was just messing around with it. We needed a 12th guy. He took it. And by the end of the season, he won the league and won some money. And it was one of those that was like, it's probably because I lost.
Why do you even try, right?
But exactly. And it required such a little skill in that league that year, just because of injuries and how everything shook out, that I just decided this year I was just going to watch football and see what I thought. And I got to be honest, man, I've been a lot happier. I haven't watched as much football as I have in the past, but I feel like the football I have watched, I've enjoyed a lot more.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that jives with my experience this year. And I want to tell you this story because one, like the way it concludes is kind of crazy. But it also led me to what I would call kind of a counterintuitive thing, because you said that part of your hatred comes from the fact that you lost in that league to the guy who won and was just making random moves. I won my league this year, but I just found myself
humble brag.
Well, it's not Yeah, I guess it is humble brag. But I won the league this year, and yet still, I was just like, I'm not really enjoying this. Like, I am constantly refreshing, like, did this guy get another reception? Did this guy score a touchdown? I really need him to. And it did kind of take away from my enjoyment as well, because, like, rather than just being immersed in the game and what's going on in the game, I'm invested, like, I need DK Metcalf to get one more catch or whatever the case is, right? So that's kind of, that was kind of tough. But the story of fantasy here is, so I finished first in my league. I had the second best record, win-loss speaking. I had the most points for, and so I was in the the four-team finals, right? And we had a one-week semi and a one-week final. So this all wrapped up last weekend. I was matched up in the semis against a guy who had a very strong team and had come on really strong at the end. Great team name, by the way, DJ Chark, do.
Love it.
So I'm in the Golden Tate Warriors. So the Golden Tate Warriors were matched up against DJ Chark, do. And that was a good semifinal matchup. I won that one by a slim margin and was very glad about that because the DJ Chark team had been very, very strong the last few weeks. It was one of those that just like came on strong at the very end, like kind of middle of the pack for most of the season, and then just scoring ridiculous amounts of points because he had Derrick Henry on his team, basically. That's another frustration, right? Like, these things just are random and crazy and unpredictable, and they happen, and then people get bragging rights about them, even though they had nothing to do with the success, realistically speaking, you know?
Normally the strong players cannibalize each other in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. So then I go to the finals, and this, of course, is last weekend, which is the same weekend of the kind of de facto NFC East title game. It was the Cowboys at Philadelphia playing there. It's a close game. The Philadelphia defense guts it out, really limits Dak Prescott, and more importantly, Zeke Elliott, and they end up winning, right? So the guy I'm playing, his name is Mike. He's a huge Cowboys fan, like diehard. We went to college together, and he would always wear his Cowboys jerseys. And I'm obviously a huge Eagles fan, so we would always rib each other about that. So the backdrop of this final round is that he's a Cowboys fan, I'm an Eagles fan, and the Eagles beat the Cowboys that day. So that's already like a bad day for him. And then we're doing this fantasy matchup. I have the higher projected number of points, so I'm supposed to win, but my team just like crazily underperforms throughout pretty much the entire day. So I have guys like Nick Chubb, who got less than 5 points on the day, and Chris Carson, who got 7 points and then went on IR because he got injured so badly. Zach Ertz, who was taken out effectively in the first quarter with a broken rib, and now we come to find out it was reported yesterday, a lacerated kidney, which just sounds horrifying. So anyway, my team's doing terribly, right? Of course, I have Lamar Jackson, though, which really helps. So he gets me, you know, just shy of 30 points. But then
he's probably pulled you through this
year. Oh, for sure. 100%. If I had not, you know, taken a flyer on Lamar Jackson in the draft, I would not have won this league at all. And that's, again, like a lot of it's just arbitrary, right? So I happen to be on the receiving end of that. But if I was not, I would just get frustrated about it. And then the other crazy thing is, and I kind of do feel bad for Mike here because like on Saturday night, I was just like, I need a better defense because I don't think Philly's going to do that great against Dallas. I'm going to pick up Indianapolis. So I picked up Indianapolis, who was playing Carolina, and they did 5 sacks, 3 picks, and had 2 return touchdowns. So I got 30 points out of my defense. And that basically made up for everything else that the rest of my position players had not done. And so we were going into the final game and I needed like 7.5 points, I think, from Tyreek Hill. And I got like 6 points. And then I got to the point where I just needed like an 8-yard reception from him because we're in a PPR league. And I got it like right at the end, third quarter. His final reception of the game was that reception. And it just put me just over the edge. So I won this matchup. I'll show you the score. 125.22. to 125.08. So I beat my nemesis Cowboys fan by 0.14. And like that felt really good, but A, I was stressed out about this all day. And B, like it could not have felt good for him. So I almost feel bad about it. And then I know that if he had beat me, I would really feel bad about it. So I just don't think it's worth it to do this again next year. I don't think it is. And that was a money league too. So like there was money involved, and that just makes it even more stressful and more frustrating if it doesn't go the way you want it to. So I also think that I'm done fantasy football, Pete. But I say that, I was talking to my wife about this, and I was like, yeah, August rolls around and I'm like, oh, I'm ready for football to come back. Like, let's do fantasy. And so I'll probably be right back at it. But at the very least, I think limiting to one league is the way to do it, right? Because then you're not too invested.
Yeah. And when you're cheering against yourself, when you're in multiple leagues, that gets stressful too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all I have for small ball, Pete. You ready to go on to Take Shop?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Well, for Take Shop, I've got a take that's bound to be very controversial. And the take is, quite simply, that Aaron Rodgers isn't a very good quarterback anymore.
The number one overall seed in the NFC's quarterback is not good anymore.
Correct.
I'm interested. Let's go.
All right. So first thing, I was watching some of that game against the Lions today. And let's put this in perspective. I mean, the NFC is kind of weird this year. Like, there are some top-heavy teams like the Niners. And then there are other teams like the Packers, who barely beat the 3-win Lions today, right?
True.
Playing with a backup quarterback who's not good. And by the way, the Packers lost to this team called the Eagles earlier this year, which barely won their division at 9-7 by squeaking out a win through three quarters against the New York Football Giants, piloted by a guy named Daniel Jones, who you may have heard of, but he fumbles the ball a lot and throws a lot of picks.
Supposedly he's going to be good. We'll see.
Supposedly. We'll see. Okay, so that's the Packers. So when we talk about the Packers as, you know, the number N seed, first I think we have to like contextualize what the competition has been. And I was watching them earlier in this game, and I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Rodgers and Rodgers' career, but as we have seen time and time again, players have kind of a shelf life, and in football in particular, the drop-off can be pretty significant. And I thought this would be a good renaissance year for Rodgers because he has Matt LaFleur coming in, right? Offensive guru coming from Tennessee. Lots of good ideas. You know, Mike McCarthy, many thought, was kind of a limiting factor for Rodgers, and Matt LaFleur was the guy to kind of unlock everything. But that's not been what's happened, at least the way I see it, here in 2019. So let me give you some stats here. Aaron Rodgers is 10th in the league in passes completed. He trails notable heavyweights like Jared Goff and Jameis Winston, by the way, in that category. He's thrown, however, the 8th most pass attempts, right? So 10th most passes completed, 8th most pass attempts. So it's not like he's completing a ridiculous number or ridiculous percentage of his passes. He is not in the top 10 in passing yards. He is not in the top 10 in passing touchdowns. He is not in the top 10 in passer rating or in long passes. He does lead the league, and this is one place where he's always been very, very good, and I expect him to continue to be. He leads the league in a pass interception rate because he's a very accurate passer. I think he's thrown 3 picks all year. So it's not the Jameis Winston problem. Jameis Winston, by the way, I don't know if you saw this. He's the sole member. He joined today of the 30 touchdown, 30 pick club. So
it's a 30 for 30. ESPN will air that here next year.
It's going to be great. I can't wait. however, Aaron Rodgers is 6th in sacked yards lost. I will be the first to acknowledge that, you know, a lot of the sacked stuff and really these quarterback stats in general are very dependent on the strength of your offensive line. So, you know, I understand that. Sixth in sacked yards lost. He is not in the top 10 in passing yards per game. He is not in the top 10 in yards per pass attempt or yards per pass completion or adjusted yards per pass attempt or net yards per pass attempt or adjusted net yards per pass attempt. So basically in any of the traditional statistics that we use to evaluate quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers is no longer in the top 10 of these things. And this is despite the fact that he has good receiver talent. He has good tight end talent in Green Bay. And he has an offensive coach who's supposed to, you know, unlock all of these things for him. Rather, we see a guy who's like, he's able to game manage very effectively. He's able to make throws, at least not inaccurately, but he's not able to string together, consecutive downs of football where he is just slinging the ball anywhere across the field, anywhere. I mean, the year we met Pete, 2017, spring, those playoffs, the Packers-Cowboys game, divisional round, Rodgers made one of the most insane passes I've ever seen to basically win the game. And it was, I forget who the receiver was actually at this point, but it was to the sideline and was just placed in the only spot it could be where the defender couldn't get to it, but his receiver could. And it was crazy. And at that point, I was like, Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. But I just think here, 2 years removed from that, we're so far from that. And it's a bummer. And I could be very proven wrong if Rodgers leads a Super Bowl charge here over the next few weeks. And that would be exciting and fun to see. But as I look at it right now, I don't see Aaron Rodgers as an elite quarterback, as a tier one quarterback. I would put him at maybe slightly above average, but closer to average than elite. What do you think?
All very valid points. You know, I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers fan by any stretch.
Well, you just think he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah. I don't think he's a great guy to play with either. You see a lot of his team seem to, and coaching really doesn't seem to respond to him very well. My question to you after all those stats, which I totally buy, is until 2 years ago, name me two other quarterbacks in the NFL who you would have taken over Aaron Rodgers. I think that is the only thing where I agree his stats aren't there. And I'm going to slap myself in 5 minutes when I talk about the eye test. But at the end of the day, until I would say a year or two ago, what quarterback were you more, aside from Tom Brady, who were you more confident in on the field that he would take care of the football, he would make something happen, and he would keep your team in it more than Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I mean, probably I would say Russell Wilson, Drew Brees.
That's fair.
But I mean, he's right up there. Like, you're right. I mean, 2 years ago, they were all in the same tier to me, right? Like, if I was picking a quarterback to anchor my franchise, it would be probably one of those four.
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally buy it. I think he is benefiting from a coach who was brought in specifically to try to find his strengths and utilize them.
Right.
I think people really rag on Mike McCarthy. I think for a long time, Mike McCarthy was doing a great job in Green Bay. I think his scheming just got stale. Aaron Rodgers became more of a diva, and then they also couldn't give him an offensive line to truly protect him, so he was getting wrecked by guys like Khalil Mack on a regular basis. And I mean,
which that can't feel good when Khalil Mack is coming at you like a freight train.
And in Green Bay, you can't lose to guys like the Bears and the Vikings all the time, and who have been really good, comparatively speaking, to the rest of the league in the past couple of years has been the Vikings, and then minus a missed field goal in the playoffs last year, the Bears. So I think a lot of circumstances drove that coaching change specifically to try to prop Aaron Rodgers up for a few more years.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think you look at what's going on in Pittsburgh right now, where Big Ben has been on the decline for 2 or 3 years. I mean, obviously a different body type, different skill set, but at the end of the day, a very clutch player who is getting a lot done really down the stretch for them. I think you got to give some credit to the Green Bay ownership that they brought in a guy to set him up for success. So I agree with you. I don't think he's elite. I think much like Tom Brady, there's a lot of skill set there and a lot of know-how and improvisation on the field that makes it work, but it's been putting the right pieces around him to make the scheme work for him rather than try to jerry-rig something around him.
Yeah, I mean, if we're defining a full season as playing like 15 games or more, he didn't play a full season in 2017 because he missed half of it with injury, and didn't play a full season in 2013, again, missed half of it with injury. But given the full seasons that he's played, he's thrown 24 touchdowns this year, and that is the least of any full season. And if you look at his yards per attempt, also the lowest of any full season he's ever played too. So I definitely see some real decline. Let me check his QBR real quick. QBR, also the lowest of any full season that he's played by a significant amount. QBR is only 54 this year. And I just think it does not bode well. And it's not like he's been sacked a lot more than before too. I mean, in 2012, for example, his QBR was 71.2. Was sacked 51 times that year, which is a career high for him. He's only been sacked 35 times this year. So I don't know if he's seeing ghosts out there or what, but he's definitely declining. And it's too bad on the one hand, because he was a really fun guy to watch. And for several years there was I would say one of the best three or four quarterbacks in the league. But it's I think he's no longer that for sure. And I would say he's a lot closer to average, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the NFL as a whole, we've talked about it a couple times here over the past couple of years. The NFL has gotten away from pocket passers so much. And I mean, you look at the emergence of Lamar Jackson this year, where we knew he was a freak athlete, but again, Harbaugh was able to scheme for him and really rebuild his entire offense around him. You see these mobile quarterbacks, which for so long the NFL stiff-armed, is finally embracing. And I think Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys who helped bridge that gap, where he was never a true pocket passer. He was always a guy running around making off-balance throws. But the Pat Mahomes, the Lamar Jackson have really changed the way that we look at the game. And so I think he deserves a little bit of credit for that. But I think guys who are truly mobile and not just able to improvise on the field are what's going to make that happen here in the future.
Yeah, well, you're reminding me of to give a little teaser of my take shop for next week, because I think we need to talk about how the hype surrounding Lamar Jackson is unwarranted. And I'll just leave it at that right now. We can talk about it more next week, but I'm eager to hear your take shot, Pete. What do you have for today?
Mine is much, much shorter than yours, and unfortunately not nearly as well thought out. But after watching the college football playoff yesterday, and what we saw was two very, very different games, but at the same time, two games that were highlighted by tremendous offenses, I'd say, with good defenses backing them up, but really some tremendous offensive firepower. And of course, by halftime of that first game, where LSU was just demolishing Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley, maybe he was already on his way to Dallas, who knows, forgot to go to bull practice for the past weeks. Big deal, no big deal. But it got me thinking again about how all the drama around the college football playoff right now really centers on an 8-team playoff and how that is the only way to get this right. And there's a lot of moving pieces logistically to do that. We have to get a lot of schools to more balanced schedules, like the Big Ten plays 10 conference games, the ACC plays 9, the SEC plays 9, Pac-12 is just doing their own thing. How do they fix that? But I really, as I was watching that second game last night, which was an incredible game between Clemson and Ohio State, was how we were all so excited for the BCS to go away. And at the end of the day, watching that game last night, I started thinking, like, man, where did these teams stack up? Because someone has to still be tracking this. You know, you want to know what the final top 5 teams in the BCS rankings would have been if the BCS was still in effect right now?
Number one. Let me see. Let me guess. LSU, number one.
Yep.
Ohio State, number 2.
Yep.
Clemson, number 3.
Yep.
Oklahoma, number 4.
Yep.
Alabama, number 5.
Georgia, number 5.
Georgia, number 5. Okay.
Florida, number 6.
Okay.
What that committee is giving us, with all the hype that ESPN has now generated for the College Football Playoff Committee, they're giving us the BCS rankings. And the problem in college football was never the BCS system. The problem was a lack of transparency and inability to incorporate more than 2 teams. So yes, at the end of the day, we cannot continue hating on the BCS because of the format it gave us. We can continue to hate on the scope of the BCS, that it was only 2 teams instead of 4 teams giving us some kind of a playoff like the college football playoff does now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, BCS, I don't know if the college football playoff committee approach is any better than the BCS, because
less transparent.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point I was going to make.
Yeah, that is my take, is where I thought the college football playoff, because we were introducing humans, was so much better. If anything, it's made it less transparent. And you look at things like what Urban Meyer was doing against Wisconsin a year ago when he's running up the score solely to give himself that push in the eye test, and watching college football week in and week out now, they're clearly running up the score like they used to back when the AP decided on number 1 and number 2.
Yep.
That the margin of victory was never part of the BCS, and that's where the BCS got it right, was strength of schedule was such a big player that now we just open ourselves up to more drama. And introducing that human element and this quote-unquote eye test has made this so much more difficult than it had to be. So maybe it's not as hot of a take as I thought it was as I was looking it up last night, but I realized that the BCS had it right in everything except 2 teams, and that's where they could have tweak the BCS
You don't even need to tweak it at that point, though, right? I mean, just like keep the BCS formula and just say, like, oh,
fix the format of the games.
By the way, now there's an 8-team playoff, right? Like, yeah, we'll take the top eight, and this is how we'll seed them, et cetera.
Well, and you could have even done it with four. I mean, you could have just taken the top four and done exactly what we did with the college football playoff and just re-engineered one of those quote-unquote BCS games into an additional college football playoff, just like we did now, but just take the top four instead of the top two. I always thought the BCS was this tyrannical system that no one understood, and it totally removed the human element, and that's what made college football so great. But watching those games last night and then doing this research, I realized that the BCS had it right all along.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, I don't know how controversial that take is, but you'll find no argument from me, at least. Cool. Should we go on?
That's not as much fun to not have an argument.
Well, I was trying to think about, I mean, I would definitely say, like, I cut down very strongly on the four teams are not enough. The counter argument to that, of course, is that every time a football player steps on the field, they're risking life and limb, and especially at the college level where they're risking their potential livelihood. You know, someone like Tua, for example, like he gets injured and was going to be the number one pick, or at least a first rounder, and now dropping potentially way lower than that because of the injury history. So stuff like that is very concerning. So I'm very hesitant to like sign these kids up for more football games. But I still think you need more than four teams. And like, there will always be the questions about like, what if the Georgias of the world got in, right? Like what if the Bamas of the world got in, et cetera. And until you expand the field, that you're just not going to get away from those.
Yeah, I mean, I think that has to be solved by first and foremost ensuring that all Power Five schools modify the same scheduling format where they have the same number of conference games. You limit how many FCS opponents they're going to see. Schools are going to have to take a little bit of a loss because they're probably going to have to reduce one home game every year to make that happen. And at the end of the day, the NCAA works for the Power Five commissioners, those five individuals. So what's really interesting about this is you look at a guy like Jim Delaney, the Big Ten commissioner, who's on his way out, who's been huge in the college football playoff and everything he's done. And I like expanding it to eight. I'm not sure if I like expanding it to eight because that gives me more football and a little more opportunity for chaos. And maybe that's why I like it so much, is I have more playoff games and so a bigger field. It's just like March Madness. It's more fun when more people get in.
Oh, totally.
But I understand the counter argument with four teams, but you look at what a guy like Jim Delaney has said and how they're not getting away from four teams. And he had a very interesting quote last year after Ohio State got left out in favor of Alabama. And Jim Delaney said, it'll be interesting to, I'm obviously paraphrasing, but it'll be interesting to reevaluate this when an ACC or an SEC school gets left out of the playoff, which obviously isn't happening anytime soon with the way LSU, Alabama, Clemson play year in, year out.
Virginia Tech.
But you have to wonder. Oh, be still my heart. But you have to wonder, the SEC and the ACC pretty much run the college football playoff, in my opinion, right now. And the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the Big 12 are just scratching to get in right now. So we'll see if the parity in college football can shift at all, because what the playoff has done is they've devalued so many bowl games. Which is really sad, and I think the way that
nobody cares about the non-CFP bowl game.
No one even cares about the New Year's Six bowls. Right. To be honest, I mean, how many people watched Penn State play Memphis yesterday? That was not a compelling matchup. It was a good game, but it was not a compelling matchup. Penn State had everything to lose. Memphis had everything to gain.
Right.
But you just look at
Penn State. By the way, did win. I'll just throw that out there.
They did. They looked good in the end. Didn't look good in the beginning.
Yeah.
But the parity in college football, I would argue, has never been worse than it is right now with the invention of the playoff.
I completely agree with that. Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
And I mean, I know you've had your kind of issues with the NFL this year and recent years, Pete, and part of that, I think, is the Redskins. I've had my issues with being a fan of college football because of this parity issue, and it just gets really obnoxious when, like, I'm not even I don't like Alabama because I don't like any super dominant team in any sport. You know, I don't like the Patriots because they win all the time, right? That's just not fun. For me as a fan, but that's not like my thing about college football is not that I don't like Bama. It's just that I don't like this lack of parity, and I don't like how it's always the same programs over and over again. And and the fact that players aren't paid and that schools are really, what it comes down to is like relying on alumni donations and boosters to build really good programs and facilities and kind of perks to attract players. Like that just it contributes to the inequity in the system, and I just don't like it. So it is kind of harder for me to be a college football fan the more this kind of parity disappears.
Yeah, I have to be honest. A few years ago, and I don't remember thinking this through specifically, but I don't remember anyone expecting us to stop caring about bowl season like we have since the invention of the playoff. I mean, did you watch many bowl games last week around Christmas? Did you get a chance to watch any of them?
I watched a few, but not many.
I had a lot of them on in the background as I was doing stuff around the house. I took last week off work. Every 30 seconds, ESPN is reminding you about the college football playoff and how it is coming. And that is what we've been waiting for. And you're like, you know what? Maybe I was waiting for the Cheez-It Bowl because, you know what? That was an awesome game to watch. Maybe I was waiting for the Independence Bowl or the Citrus Bowl. I mean, as an average college football fan, ESPN has told you not to care about it. Aside from the fact that ESPN is showing all these games, so they'll hype them up occasionally. But all anyone has cared about is the playoffs since the first day the college football playoff rankings come out. That's all that matters. So college football's got to fix that, or they're going to keep seeing Dabo Swinney on the podium, Nick Saban with the exception of this year, Ryan Day. These guys aren't going anywhere.
Yep.
They got to fix it.
I think that's absolutely right. I guess we'll see what happens. I don't know how you fix it unless you just go back to the BCS and make it kind of an arbitrary thing anymore where there's it's less like it's more clear that even though there's like there's a methodology for selecting who gets into the BCS championship game, there's also room to debate whether or not those metrics are actually the best, right? And so then you have like a New Year's Six Bowl that's potentially more attractive than the BCS National Championship Bowl because you think that that team is actually the best in the nation, right? And you want to see what that team does against a Bama, for example, or whatever the case is, right? Like I'm interested in the Michigan Bama game, but I think that's not getting as much attention as it should because everyone's like, well, they're not in the top four. They're not, you know, competing for the championship, right? So it's too bad. It does make college football in general, I think, less fun. It just narrows the focus so much.
You and I have talked about how we kind of root for our conferences. Like, obviously, I'm not a diehard for any ACC team. You're not a diehard for – you're a big Penn State fan, but you're not a diehard for Wisconsin or Ohio State or any of these because they're in the same conference. But for the most part, you'll kind of root for your conference for a little validation, right?
Yeah.
I found myself this year hoping that both Alabama and Clemson would get left out if those two programs with so much money, so much clout were on the outside looking in. Would we start – giving more emphasis to the New Year's Six Bowls and how would that change? So I was a little bummed how it worked out. Obviously they got it right. Like Clemson deserves to be there, but I was really interested to see if the ACC or the SEC teams got left out, how much that would change it. Cause there's so much money in the Southeast and up the Eastern Seaboard.
Speaking of Clemson, Trevor Lawrence's hair is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
It's real bad. It's real bad.
Like who told him that is a good look? I mean, does anybody find that attractive? Do you think is
there was something that was on the ACC network of all places about he must have lost a long ago because he's had that hair for a while. But there is a girl who goes to Clemson who looks like him, and they've had the two of them take pictures next to each other. Like Trevor, man, like. I know that you could be a number one overall pick next year. You've won a title. You could very well win another one, but dude, it's not a good look for people to say you look like a girl and for that girl that you look like a boy. Like, let's think this one through.
Yeah. I also don't think there's any way he's a number one overall pick. I know that was the discussion, especially last year. He's kind of cooled off this year, but I don't see it at all.
I don't know if I agree with you. I think in the age of mobile quarterbacks, I don't think he's got the build.
He's so small.
NFL quarterback right now.
Yeah, I think I have bigger biceps than him, and I'm not a big guy. Like, I mean, I'm certainly not stronger than him, but just as far as like how he's built, he's not a big guy.
Do you think his hair is like Samson?
Maybe
that is. That's keeping him alive.
The secret to his strength.
I never thought about that. I think if he can bulk up, I think he doesn't have the raw talent of Lamar Jackson. But at the same time, I think he's got the arm strength, and I think he's got the legs that if he can get a little more muscular. I think on one of these 30 teams, he could start.
I have another take shot for the future about Baker Mayfield. So get ready for that.
Did you see the clip? I can't wait for that one. There was a clip today out of Cleveland who obviously are in another dumpster fire. Like they always are.
Six wins.
Yeah. I thought they were back, but
they lost to Cincinnati. in the final game of the season.
But there is a clip of a Browns fan yelling at Baker from the tunnel today, where he's yelling at Baker and he's talking about how terrible they all are. And Baker looks up at him and says, come down here and say it to my face. And the fan, without missing a beat, goes, you know, I legally can't do that. You're smarter than that.
That's hilarious. It's
like, Baker, you're getting trolled by your own fans, man.
That's really funny. It's been such a disaster in Cleveland for everybody involved. Let's save that one. Let's save the Cleveland discussion for next week, because I think there's lots of stuff we can say. Let's move on to segment three here, Pete. We'll do some quick pick-ems for the wild card round and talk about who we are taking to win. We were both looking and couldn't find a good place to get the get where all the game lines were. So let's just do a pick to win with each of these. We'll start with Titans at Patriots. Patriots, of course, dropping a game shockingly to the Dolphins today and losing their first round bye. So they are playing in a wild card round. Have to go against the Titans. It'll be the Belichick coaching tree, Belichick versus Mike Vrabel of the Titans. And Stephon Gilmore and company of the Patriots will have to try to stop Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, which is not an easy task. So this is going to be a better game than I think most people are thinking. On paper, I really like the Titans here. However, I will also say that Belichick is the best, period, at scheming playoff defenses and offenses. And I really have a hard time picking against the Patriots in this game. So I'm picking the Patriots. What do you say?
I agree with you for all the points you just made, but I think as much as it pains me to say it, playing in Foxborough in January at night is also not a place you ever want to be if you're not a Patriot. That they are just different in Foxborough. This game is an 8:15 kick in Foxborough on Saturday night. I agree, Bill Belichick can scheme with the best of them. I'm a little worried about his run defense, so I like the point you made about Derrick Henry. I think that could be a game changer right there. But at the end of the day, I'm still not a believer in Ryan Tannehill. I think he's good. I think he will be decent in this game, but I expect him to throw a pick or two on still a good Patriots secondary, which I can really start to see turning the tide. I'm not going to go out on a limb like I did with the Super Bowl last year, where I said Julian Edelman's going to tear it apart. I don't think anyone's going to really stand out in this game. But I think the Patriots will be fundamentally sound enough to get it done in Foxborough on a Saturday night. I really do.
Sounds good. Yeah, I agree. I will not be shocked if the Titans come away with a win. And in fact, I would also be elated, because it would be great to see the Patriots exit at the wild card round. I don't pretend to be impartial when it comes to Patriots football performance, but I do expect them to win here. Let's move on to Bills at Texans, Pete. Bills at 10-6, Texans at 10-6. These teams' records are identical on paper. They both have kind of their Achilles heels, and they're both very confusing teams. They have performed very well at points this season and very poorly at points this season. But in this matchup, I actually think I like the Bills. They'll be obviously playing on the road, which is never an easy thing since they did not win their division. They got the wild card. The Patriots locked up the division. So the Bills are going to Houston. But I really like the Bills' defense. I think Sean McDermott is doing an amazing job as coach there. I would like to see him as coach of the year. I don't think he's going to get it because of the record. But I like the Bills in this matchup. I'll take McDermott in the McDermott-O'Brien battle every time. I know you like to call him Tom O'Brien, but I like that. I like that matchup. I like the way Josh Allen has matured as a quarterback. He is obviously very mobile, not accurate. He's kind of he has the opposite of the Aaron Rodgers problem there. Likes to throw picks, likes to overthrow his open receivers, but he's very mobile. And I think the Texans will have a harder time containing him than people realize. And the Bills' defense really is going to have a easy time, I think, shutting down the Texans' offense, who's been without Fuller for half the season because he can't stay healthy. Obviously, Hopkins is amazing, and if the Texans win, I think it'll be because of the Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins connection. But I like the Bills in this matchup. What do you think?
Well, I'm still mad at the Bills for running Tyrod out of town. So
I know, Tyrod is awesome.
Struggling to root for him. Overall, I think that's a sound pick. Because the records are identical, though, I'm actually going to go with Houston because of the matchup you specifically called out of Deshaun to Hopkins right there. I think you look at Deshaun Watson's stats. I mean, almost 3,900 yards this year, 26 touchdowns, 12 picks. Obviously, this is only one game. But you even look at the last five games that the Texans have played, where their only loss was to Denver in a weird, quirky game, 38-24. Otherwise, they beat the Titans. They beat New England. They beat the Colts. They've just been able to really step it up when they had to this entire season, watching them from the first and second week. You know, I follow the Colts pretty closely, so I've been impressed with the Texans all along. I didn't think this race in the AFC South was nearly as close as the records indicated. I thought the eye test, ironically, was what I really liked about Houston and Deshaun Watson. I think it's finally his turn to break through and get something done. And old Tom O'Brien, I know. Bill O'Brien has done a much better job than I was giving him credit for even up until last year. So I like the Texans in this matchup.
You're a believer now, huh?
I wouldn't say a believer. I still have a vendetta against the Bills. I can't root for them anymore.
That's fair. I was also very sad. I mean, you know, you and I were the founding members of the Terod Taylor fan club. He's still on a roster. He's with the Chargers. Yeah. I think, is he the third string or second string for the Chargers? You know?
I think he was the second string.
Let me look up the Chargers depth chart. He better be second string. I would be elated if the Eagles picked him up and he could back up Carson Wentz. I'd feel confident about that. All right, Chargers depth chart. While I look this up, next matchup is Vikings at Saints. The 10-6 Vikings traveling to the 13-3 Saints to play Drew Brees in the dome. He won't have to contend with Minnesota weather, and he wouldn't have to anyway if he was going to Minnesota because they have a nice, beautiful indoor stadium. Who do you like here, Pete? This is a tough one for me to diagnose.
I really like the Saints here. I have been disappointed in the play of Kirk Cousins and that Vikings team overall this year. But I think you see guys like Stephon Diggs, who, I mean, still put up 1,100 yards, but he seemed to take a step back. That team has just been so different when Dalvin Cook has been out of the game. And obviously, he's expected to start this upcoming weekend. They've rested him a lot recently. But seeing them rest him down the stretch, kind of relegating themselves to the sixth overall seed, I worry about the chemistry with that team and how bad they looked on Monday Night Football 2 weeks ago. I think especially when you also look back in 2018 with the Minneapolis Miracle, with that crazy play down the sidelines for the Vikings to beat the Saints at home. I think the Saints are going to be angry based on the way that they've been ousted out of the playoffs the past 2 years with the missed pass interference last year. They're looking for blood this year. I don't think they'll be stopped in this game against the Vikings. I expect Drew Brees to have a monster game, to be honest.
I think you've convinced me. I like it. The Saints are also playing at home. I mean, in the NFL especially, probably more than any other sport, that makes a big difference. So I also expect the Vikings or the Saints to come out with a victory here. Interestingly, the Vikings played the Saints in the preseason, and the Vikings won, for what it's worth, 34-25. But the Saints are kind of weird because they've played some amazing games. I mean, that 48-46 Niners-Saints game, what I think was the highest scoring NFL game in history, right? Some crazy stat like that. But they also played a very much too close game against the Panthers that they won 34-31. But then they've also come out and like stomped on the Colts 34-7 in mid-December. So they've been weird lately and kind of, I guess, mostly up, but a little bit down here and there. And so I'm not totally confident. They would not be my Super Bowl pick at this point, but I do think they're going to beat the Vikings at home.
Fair enough. How about Seattle, Philly?
Oh man.
I have a feeling you're a little biased on this one, but
well, I'm definitely biased in the sense that I want Philly to win. But watching that game today, just watching everyone go out, obviously Zach Ertz is already out with the lacerated kidney. Miles Sanders went out with an ankle injury, and he was downgraded to out pretty quickly, which is never a good sign. Same with Brandon Brooks, our all-pro right guard, one of probably the best guard in the NFL, honestly. He's incredible. He's out with a shoulder injury, was also downgraded pretty quickly. You know, guys in and out of the medical tent all day. Deshaun Hall, injured on the final play of the game. Nelson Agholor's out. Alshon Jeffries on IR. Kamu Grugier-Hill's on IR. I mean, all the playmakers for this team, or most of the playmakers, are out indefinitely or an injured reserve. Oh, I didn't even mention Lane Johnson, one of the best right tackles in the NFL. He was out for the game and might not be back in time for the wild card round. So this game or this team is a skeleton of themselves. And I don't see the offensive line holding up well against the Seahawks, especially since the Seahawks now have a guy named Jadeveon Clowney on their team. And Carson Wentz has been really good at making lemonade out of lemons, but I think the magic has to end somewhere, and I unfortunately see it ending in the divisional round. I just want to be realistic, and I the secret to happiness, Pete, is low expectations. So I figure if I expect them to lose, and they do, I'll just say like, oh, I was right. And if I expect them to lose and they don't, then I'll just be pumped. So I'm picking the Seahawks to win in Philadelphia, despite having to travel across the United States and play on foreign soil.
Yeah. Do you give any credence to the way that the Seahawks lost tonight? Devastating fashion, stopped on like the 6-inch mark with 9 seconds left in the game by the 49ers. They could have been getting that first round bye, played at home. Now they got to turn around, go to the East Coast, play in a cold Philadelphia, I assume. What is this? It's a 4:40 start, so the sun will be going down within 45 minutes of that game starting. Yep. Does that factor in at all, you think?
Well, I mean, all that stuff, I think, helps. Maybe the close game today hurts Philly because the Seahawks will be playing hungry a little bit. But things that help them, obviously traveling all the way across the nation, playing at home in Philly, playing in the cold, it's probably going to be colder than what they normally play in Seattle. All those things help. The fact that the Seahawks don't really have a real NFL offensive line, that definitely helps if the Eagles pass rush can take advantage of that. But the Seahawks, at the end of the day, have this guy named Russell Wilson, and there's a reason that, you know, I've never seen the Seahawks play a normal game. It's just because freaky stuff can happen in Seahawks games, and most of that's because Russell Wilson can do Russell Wilson things that, you know, only Russell Wilson and maybe someone else like Lamar Jackson can do, right? But that scares me, especially against an Eagles secondary that has been able to give up the long ball in almost every game they've played this year. So I hear you, but I still like the Seahawks here.
That's fair. You obviously made many more points than I could about this team. You know them so much better. My concern with Philly is I just don't know who this team is. I mean, we're into the playoffs. And I still don't really know what I get week in, week out. I mean, obviously you guys lost to the Dolphins. You already lost to Seattle once. The last three games, you've only played mediocre NFC East opponents, but that game against the Cowboys was great. So I just don't know what to get out of Philadelphia, and that's why I really don't know who to pick on this one. I mean, all the metrics say the Seahawks should be just fine on this one, and like you talked about, the great wild card, even after all these years, Russell Wilson is still the greatest wild card in the NFL, in my opinion. And there's never been a normal Seahawks game, just like you said. There's never been a normal one. So I like the Seahawks. I think it's going to be a close game. I am not as high on Carson Wentz as you are either, and I still think the moment could be a little too big for him.
Oh, I'm so high on Carson.
I'm interested to see how you guys handle beast mode.
Let me give you I'm not worried about beast mode. Don't worry. We held Barkley to 11 yards on 10 touches today until he broke free for a 68-yard touchdown. But
he was pretty one-dimensional today. The Giants didn't exactly have Daniel Jones slinging it for 400 yards on you, right?
That is true, yeah. But I'm very high on Carson Wentz. I'm glad you brought this up. There are a few things I wanted to say about him. So one, I put a thread on Twitter about this. I don't know if you saw it, but I wanted to compare Wentz, Favre, Montana, Marino, Peyton Manning, and Dak through their first four seasons. Of those six, so Wentz, Favre, Montana, Marino, Manning, Prescott, Wentz has the second highest completion percentage. He has more yards than Favre and Montana. He's only played 55 games because he's had a couple injury-shortened season, but he has more TDs than Prescott and Favre and Montana. His passer rating is higher than Montana, Manning, and Favre. He's thrown fewer interceptions than all of them except Montana. And he beats Montana, Manning, and Favre on adjusted yards per attempt. And by the way, he's the leading receiver among the six because he's had two receptions for 11 yards, which is more than any of them have. But a couple other stats I saw on the broadcast today. The Eagles are the first team in NFL history to have a 4,000-plus-yard passer in Wentz, and no wide receivers with more than 500 receiving yards. So he's performed exceptionally well this year, despite having virtually no receiving core. And then another stat I saw, over the last 3 weeks, in the fourth quarter and overtime, Carson Wentz has an 81% completion percentage, 352 passing yards, and 4 touchdowns. All of those stats are first in the NFL over that time span. So, if that doesn't say clutch, Pete, I don't know what does. I don't know why you're not a believer and a hater. I know you're just afraid to play against him for years to come, and you don't want him to be the truth, but I'm sorry to say, he is.
I think he's too injury prone. And I think you also look at teams like what Peyton had to do with those early years in Indianapolis. Those were bad teams that he got drafted on. I think the Eagles.
But I mean, look at the Eagles this year, though. I mean, what the Eagles don't have skill position players around him this year, and he's still making.
Not this year, but he's been playing for 4 years at this point. Yeah. So he's had a lot of time to grow up with a lot of raw talent around him. I mean, I definitely think he's elite, and I think he's one of the best in the game right now, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm just not there. I would take him over any quarterback I've had in DC in the last 10 years. That is for sure. But I don't know.
So if you're the GM of the Las Vegas Raiders and you have this ridiculous ability to bring in a new quarterback from anywhere else in the NFL for free, who do you choose?
Lamar Jackson.
Okay. And where's Wentz on that list?
Fourth or fifth, because I'd go Lamar. I'd go Pat Mahomes.
Yep.
Then I'd go with Deshaun Watson. I think if he can stay healthy, much like Wentz, I think he's a great weapon in there, both with his legs and his arm. And then I'd go Wentz. I would.
Okay, so number
although
four.
Although I'd put Jimmy Garoppolo up there tied with Wentz, to
oh,
be honest.
Oh, gross. Get out of here. Get out of here. Yeah, I think your Lamar Mahomes take is spot on 1 and 2. I would probably go Mahomes 1, Lamar 2. For reasons we can get into next week on my take shop when I talk about how the Lamar hype is unwarranted. But I would take Wentz ahead of Watson. So
is that because of arm strength?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, arm strength and accuracy.
I also think Wentz is a little bit more accurate than Watson, yeah. So strength and accuracy. Yeah. And I just think those are traits that are a little bit more durable as well. I mean, Watson's a little more mobile, but 5 years from now, that's not going to be really a factor in Watson's game. At least I'd be surprised if it is, you know.
That's true. I'm really interested to see how Carson Wentz handles the moment. Obviously, he's played in some big games before. I really liked what he did against Dallas 2 weeks ago. Obviously, that moment didn't become too big for him. But at the end of the day, he hasn't had a lot of exposure at this level. Obviously, he played in some big games in college. He's played in some huge games in Philadelphia, like I said, but this is a different kind of football he's about to walk into, and this isn't the mediocre NFC East. Mediocre might be too positive talking about the NFC East this year.
But I think so.
This will be a defining year for Carson Wentz. If they go out in the first round, he's going to deal with this for a long time. If they make it out of the first round, I think he'll have more believers. That Nick Foles was great to get him a ring and carry that team through, but I think Nick Foles set back the evolution of Carson Wentz quite a bit.
You know, you're as you just rain on Carson Wentz here, you're making me change my mind. I'm going to pick the Eagles to beat the Seahawks. Just so if I'm right, I can say to you, I was right.
This reminds me of the time when I was down on the Nationals and you told me they would win the East, and I disagreed with you, and they didn't win the East, but they
won the World Series.
And all right.
Yeah, man. Well, this has been fun. That's the end of all the stuff I have for the show today. Anything we missed before we sign off?
No, the only thing is I'm a little disappointed you didn't notice this entire time. I've been drinking out of a Washington Nationals World Series champion koozie the entire time.
That's
I keep showing it to you and you're ignoring it.
I didn't notice it at all. How's it feel? I mean, we established that you've got a few years to bask in the glow of the World Series victory, so it's nice.
Feels good, man.
I haven't had one since 2008. I kind of forget what it feels like.
Yeah, I spent a lot of money, man.
On swag?
I forgot some of the money I was spending. Like, I bought a Christmas ornament the third day of November, and it showed up 3 days before Christmas. And you're like, what is this? This is great. I opened it. And I was like, oh yeah, I spent $35 on this.
$35 on an ornament?
Yeah, wow. I spent a lot of money. Wow. Spent a lot of money. I have a lot of t-shirts. Worth it, but a lot of t-shirts.
When in Rome.
Exactly. It's been fun to get back on the horn, my man. We'll have to do this again next week and do some hot takes on the wild card weekend.
Yeah, can't wait. To our listeners, if you want to give us some feedback, let us know what segments we should add or subtract, where we were wrong on our hot takes, email thirdstring3rdstring@vernacularpodcast.com. And until next time, have a great week.